The Clouser minnow, developed by Bob Clouser, is probably the most effective streamer fly for underwater work that's been developed in the last 30 years. We can make them that are only 1 inch long, and we use them in salt water that long. They're also good in fresh water. Or we can make them with synthetic hair up to 10 and 12 inches. One of the things that makes this fly good is it has lead eyes, which cause it to go down. And we use a different lead eyes to get different depths. You can see here that I have little tiny lead eyes.
Lowercase eyes, capital eyes, sad eyes, cartoon eyes, loving eyes, pig's eyes, frog eyes, actual human eyes, dead eyes like a shark's eyes.
And I have larger lead eyes.
Welcome back to the Secret Society of Fly Tires. For a fifth time now, you've chosen to waste an hour with me and my guests. I can't tell you how grateful I am for the folks that have already joined me in the early episodes of this podcast. I started things off with Jonathan Farmer, and followed that up with April Vokey, Eric Leininger, and Wes McNew. For this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with the one and only Chuck Reagan. In his professional life, he's a Northern California fly fishing guide, a fly tire on the Loon Pro team, and the frontman of Hot Water Music, who happened to have a new album out called Feel the Void. Chuck also has a new hot sauce that's out and winning awards already, too. How many fishing guides out there have toured the world for decades leading a great band and make delicious hot sauces? I'd put my money on Chuck being the only one. If I'm wrong, please feel free to report this podcast to the proper authorities for misinformation.
You are going to jail!
You know, we're not even tying flies on this podcast or fishing them. We're just talking about them. I'm in my car again, pretending like I'm talking to what they call a listener base in the biz, but I'm just talking into a microphone to myself. Thankfully, I keep forcing people that are passionate about the hobby to talk to me, so this whole show isn't just me rambling about weird stuff for an hour. If you are listening out there, I want to say thanks to you also.
Thank you. Thank you, all dear friends.
I really do appreciate you giving this podcast a shot. If you like the program, it helps me if you rate the show and leave a review on whatever platform you choose to listen on. Sharing it with your friends won't hurt my feelings either. Today's episode of the podcast is highlighting another pattern that is extremely versatile in the same ways as a leech or an intruder, just with a different flavor, the Clouser minnow. The show started with a clip of Lefty Cray talking about the Clouser minnow, and I meant no disrespect by editing the clip. I was mostly joking about all the different types of eyes that can be used when tying Clousers. But I encourage everyone to be creative. You can do anything if you put your mind to it. I believe in you. Reach for the stars. You miss every shot you don't take. You have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find a prince. The Clouser minnow is a pattern that almost screams at the tire to add a little touch of creativity. It's a pattern you can tweak and tailor to any situation. A pattern that makes solving the mystery of matching the hatch seem a little less scientifically overwhelming. Was that Bob Clouser's goal when he crafted up the first prototype on the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania 35 years ago? He probably didn't know then that he was creating one of the best-selling patterns of all time. That it would go on to become one of the first patterns taught in many beginning fly tying classes. Bob perfected the fly in 1987 after field testing for around 3 years. I read in Jay Zimmerman's The Best Bass Flies that Bob actually received the first ever packet of lead dumbbell eyes from Wapsie Fly Company en route to creating his famous pattern. The legendary Lefty Cray helped his friend Bob evolve the pattern and had been reported to have used a Clouser to catch over 83 different species of fish. Lefty was quoted saying, "If I only had one pattern to fish for any species anywhere in the world, it would be the Clouser minnow." Here's a quick and dirty rundown from Bob Clouser on how the fly got its name. Lefty phoned me to ask how the river conditions were because he was bringing a friend up to fish. I said, "Very good, but I have something to give you that will outcatch any fly we ever cast smallmouth." I heard a grunt on the other end of the line. When he arrived, I put a half dozen of the flies in his hand, and his first remark was, "Are these done?" I said yes, and he and his friend went out on the river to fish. I mentioned that I would be over to check on how the flies were producing later in the day. As I approached their boat, I took notice that Lefty had on a red and white hackle fly. I asked how he was doing, and he said, "Not so good." I asked why he wasn't using the new fly pattern I'd gave him. His friend broke into a big smile that I've not seen in a long time and said, "Bob, I want to thank you. I just out-caught Lefty Cray with 6 smallmouth to his 1 using your fly all day while Lefty was using a dozen other patterns for testing your new fly. Lefty said, what are you going to name that fly? I said he should name it since I wasn't good at that. He said, well, it's tied by Clouser and it goes deep and swims like a hurt baitfish. How about Clouser's Deep Minnow? And the rest is history. Bob Clouser and Lefty Cray influenced pretty much all modern streamers to some degree. Sadly, Lefty Cray passed away in 2018, and I never had the chance to meet him. If I did, I'd tell him that to me, Clouser and Lefty sound like some kind of Columbo-style detective team that could be hired to solve a mystery. And they kind of did, if you think about it. They basically figured out the fly pattern that every hungry bass and more want to eat the most. They could tie it with Big League Chew instead of bucktail, and I'd gobble it right up and keep it in my cheek for 9 innings.
Oh my God, shut up!
If only we could apply their innovative problem-solving skills to the many esoteric mysteries that haunt my brain pretty much every waking hour. We could send them around to different ancient megalithic sites every day until they figured out the true origins of civilization. I would have had them on a plane to Göbekli Tepe as soon as possible so that we could know the truth before the next episode of this podcast came out. The UFO or UAP issue would be small potatoes. I could have made a few calls in an attempt to fast-track them over to the Bledsoe family in North Carolina, who report to experience strange forms of contact with an otherworldly intelligence regularly. I mean, they have a podcast too, so we're basically related, right? They'd figure out what the intelligence is behind the phenomenon and where it comes from, and then broadcast their findings to the world. People would believe them. I mean, the Clouser alone is a pretty good resume. If assigned to the Sasquatch files, they'd solve that mystery in a weekend while picking up rainforest survival skills and psychic cloaking techniques direct from the head Bigfoot in charge. If asked, they could have produced historically complete lists of members of all the major secret societies along with every crime against humanity that they ever committed. But no one ever asked them. They weren't tasked to run the weird desk at CIA headquarters. They were needed on the water and behind the vise. Honestly, catching giant stripers is much too important to worry about things that are probably true but somehow still hidden behind the curtain of perceived reality. The point of all this is to have fun and spread joy, and the Clouser has contributed to a whole lot of that. Why worry about Mothman or reptilians when there could be a 30-pound hog in the river by the airport that would almost rip your arm off to eat a hook with some dumbbell eyes and animal hair hanging off it?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well made.
The Clouser minnow looks so simple, and it can be. You can also dress it up to be whatever you'd like, as it's one of those patterns built for variation. It doesn't even have to be a minnow like its name implies. You could twist up a small version in crawfish colors for the local creek, or in shrimp pinks for the beach, add a bunch of weight or no weight, use tons of flash or make it dull and natural, and so on. There's a Clouser for everyone, every fish, and every scenario. Steve Adachi took this East Coast pattern and put his own stamp on it here on the Best Coast by tying it on a jig hook, adding a rattle, and overall making them incredibly durable for the rough NorCal surf. I almost made up a Biggie Tupac turf war out of this, but I won't because there isn't. Patterns obviously get adapted for different needs, and that's one of the coolest things about tying your own flies. Chuck Reagan had twisted up some really awesome Clousers when I joined him for a jet boat hunt for striper here in Sacramento a couple summers ago. And I thought he'd be a great source of knowledge on this fly as he ties and fishes them a lot. If you ever hear someone describe an angler as being fishy, they're talking about people like Chuck. Not only does he front the mighty hot water music and perform solo or with a camaraderie, he's an excellent fly fishing guide and fly tier. Fish just seem to find him before the other boats on the water. He really makes all of his chosen professions look easy, and he's a great instructor. When I first fished with him, I wasn't very confident with my double haul, and with his guidance, I was lobbing heavy Clousers a good distance within a couple hours and catching fish doing it. I grew up a punk and still identify as one at 40, although my feelings about what all that means have changed a lot as I've grown older. Is it weird I get similar satisfaction from tying flies at the bench and fishing now as I did playing Sick of It All covers with my friends as a kid? Seeing Chuck combine punk rock and fly fishing into a career that supports his family might be the coolest example of the American dream I can think of. I've been looking forward to talking to him more about fly tying and music and everything in between since our striper trip, and I was lucky enough to catch him while he wasn't moving, which isn't often. Here's my chat with Chuck Reagan. Chuck, thanks for being here today. I understand that you're...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I understand that you're back for a short stretch between, East Coast dates and a Canadian run with Hot Water Music. How the show's been out of the, you know, coming out of the pandemic?
Oh, it's been good. Some places are a little, it's weird. You know, we'll show up to some places and they're still kind of locked up and paranoid and everybody's masked up and, you know, there's a lot of regulation and everything followed. And then the next night we'll be somewhere where it's as if nothing ever happened. That's kind of the nature of, you know, traveling around to different cities, different regions, you know what I mean? But for the most part, it seems like the crowds are starting to open up again. People are a little bit more comfortable coming out, not completely comfortable coming out just yet, because, you know, we've had a number of shows that have sold out, and, you know, at the same time, all the tickets weren't honored. So like they've had, you know, say we sold a place out of, you know, 600 tickets and 480 people show up.
And people changing their mind,
scratching our head.
Yeah.
Well, we started hearing that, oh yes, some people just aren't comfortable. Like they bought the tickets early, you know, and some people just still aren't comfortable coming out. And they're like, okay, you know, so there's a little bit of other effort and struggle on our end, especially having Cresswell, who lives in Toronto. You know, every time he goes home, he's got to take tests to show a negative. So we got to find places for him to do a rapid PCR test, to take a test so he can just get back into his country.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and it's a whole nother world.
Yeah. I was interested to hear, because, you know, I haven't really gone to a show in the last 2 years. I'm actually going tomorrow. I'm going to go to Bottom of the Hill and go see a band. And,
nice.
I haven't been out. And so I'm curious myself. And, the last couple of years has really changed the way a lot of people live and think and stuff. And so I'm curious, you know, how we work out of this, you know. It looks like those dates in Canada and in BC. I hope that's by design, so you get some fishing in up there.
And I haven't even laid much out. I've had a couple, you know, buddies reach out, and I've been so spun here. I mean, I came back and kind of had a half a day off, and then I was just right back in the boat. And, you know, it's like leading two different, completely different lives, you know, coming in from, you know, we're getting off the stage sometimes at 1 a.m. and, you know, getting back to the hotel room and wired and up until, you know, 3-4 a.m. And I come home and immediately, you know, my dog's ready to go, and I'm waking up at that time. I'm waking up at 3:30, you know, 4 a.m. to get it going, you know. Yeah. So it's two opposite ways of living, and I don't know how long I can transition like that, you know. I don't know how much longer I can do that, but right now I seem to have a little bit of energy left to do it, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. And you know, it's good timing with Hot Water Music's new record. I mean, it's really good. Rips, dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I'm 41, you know, and I've loved punk rock and everything about it for most of my life now. And you know, in my opinion, it's tough for bands like that to age well, you know. I mean, it's nothing against anybody. It's hard to capture the same like spirit of youth or whatever, you know, the lightning in a bottle kind of thing. And
yeah,
it's awesome to see Hot Water releasing some of your best stuff after like 25 years, right? Doing it.
28 actually.
28. Sure. Yeah. I mean, everything since you guys got back together, you know, with Exister up till now and Feel the Void, it's awesome. What do you think is like the biggest driver of that consistent creativity and quality over that time?
Teamwork, you know, just community, family, support, you know, brotherhood, communication. You know, for years, that was one thing that our band was really not good at, communicating. I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, we started really young and we were all joined at the hip. We spent so much time on the road with each other that we really, really, you know, I mean, we knew each other almost too well. You know, everybody knew how to push each other's buttons and whatnot. And I think, you know, we were together so much, there definitely came a point where everybody was just, sorry about that, dropped my phone.
It's no problem.
Everybody, you know, was a little probably irritated with each other. And then from there, you go to kind of closing off and not communicating, you know, just for that night, that show, you know.
Yeah.
And then that turns into, you know, the rest of the tour, which turns into the next 6 months and, yeah, you know, so on and so forth, you know, and stack on a decade after that. And, you know, we all love each other and we're brothers. But I think that there was a lot of years that, you know, our communication was very poor with each other. And we all kind of bottled stuff up and until we exploded on each other, you know.
Yeah, being in a band is a really unique relationship. Like if you haven't ever been in a band before, I mean, it's kind of hard to describe, I guess. But it's super, I hear you, man. Super, super unique. And that stuff boils over all the time, right?
Yeah. You know, you learn a lot about each other. You learn a lot about yourself. But, I mean, sure enough, I mean, I think the past couple of years, you know, kind of coming to terms with the fact that Waller doesn't travel with us anymore, but he still wants to kind of be in the mix and write and, you know, and everybody kind of coming to terms with that and finding the comfort zone in that. And for him, you know, kind of coming out of, you know, his time away. As well was huge. Having Cresswell in the mix, where he stepped up to the plate and just started slaying it, you know, that kid just kills it. Insanely talented, super positive. You know, he's just fun.
Nice.
You know, and for guys, you know, we're all almost twice his age, you know, and for like some of us who just really, and I mean, he's been around a lot too. I'm not discrediting that at all, but you know, we're old, tired. We've been going a long time. And for somebody like him to kind of come in the mix, kind of breathes a whole new life into the band.
I was going to ask that. Yeah, it makes sense, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's huge. And it was really important to have him involved in the writing process on this new record. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been playing with us now since October 2017.
Oh,
you
wow.
know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody recently and they described like modern album releases and how different it is in today's environment. And, you know, it's like, it's not like you're just competing for attention with all the other releases in the genre or whatever came out that month. It's competing against like literally everything that's ever been released all time by every artist, you know, at the same time with the instant accessibility we have now, you know. And I just wanted to, you know, applaud you and every artist out there for putting in the effort to create, you know, and I wish you and the band best of luck with this new record. It's really good, man.
Oh, thanks, pal. That means the world.
Let's talk fly tying. Let's get into some fly tying questions. I wanted to ask you first off just how and when you got started tying.
That's a tricky, tricky thing. When I make time to tie, or better put, when I discover time to fly, to tie flies, you know. Mm-hmm. honestly, for me, nowadays, there's really just kind of one way that really works well for me, and it's just kind of tying in kind of a production line mindset, you know. I, as far as my tying goes, I can pretty confidently say that I believe I'm done tying trout flies.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see them. Maybe all this will change. Maybe, you know, when I get a little older, or who knows, maybe if my son, you know, gravitates into, you know, the art of fly tying and whatnot. But, you know, when I turned 40, like, my eyes went, you know what I mean?
Yeah, me too.
I started wearing, yeah. And it's frustrating enough just, you know, trying to, you know, thread the needle.
Yeah. What's as small as you go now? What's your limit?
Oh, about a one-aught.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the majority of my guide trips are, you know, bass and striper trips.
Sure.
Right. And so, I mean, it takes everything I can do just to keep up with, you know, the supplies that I need, you know, for my guide trips.
Sure. Yeah.
Throughout the year. And I've got it pretty dialed, you know, like I've kind of gotten to a point where, you know, I commit, you know, at some time. It usually happens kind of around holidays or when I take, like when I take some time off, you know, it happens, you know. February is a slower month. You know, I mean, for Northern California, it's a year round gig for us. Guiding here is year round, you know, operate out of three different style boats that open up all kinds of doors. So if a river's blown out, there's something else. There's always somewhere else or something else that we could do.
Totally.
And not to mention, we live, you know, here in Northern California, as you know, I mean, man, you know, everywhere around you, we have resident trout, resident striper, migratory steelhead, salmon, American shad, you know, spotted bass, smallmouth, carp, you know, largemouth. I mean, it's wild, you know, yeah, flip sure. a coin,
yeah.
you know, and, just a lot of different species we can chase, and you know. But that said, out there, a lot of clients. There are a lot of fair weather fishermen, you know. So, you know, in the wintertime or when the weather gets nasty, you know, there's plenty of great fishing to be done. But sometimes there's a few less trips. That's where I maintain my trailers, my truck, all my gear, restock the gear, change lines, you know, gut everything, you know, get my nephews stoked on whatever gear I need to get out of the garage, you know. And it's also where I start tying up what I call blanks, right? Okay. So I have, right now I'm sitting at my tie-in bench, you know, and right next to me to the wall, I screwed in a whole bunch of, like cabinet door pulls, right. Mm-hmm. You know, just screwed into the wall, stacked on each other. And, you know, I can tie a fly and just hang it on there. Right.
Nice.
Well, so I tie a lot of, you know, probably the bulk of the flies that I tie are flies for our striper. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like what I'm looking at right now are basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different, styles of blanks. Right. And when I say blanks, like for me, you know, this is how it's been working for me the past few years is, you know, I'll get a pile of eyes, you know, a pack of flash, a pack of hooks, you know, some glue, and I'll just go to town and basically hook in the vise, tie glue on the eyes, you know, put on the flash tail, you know, finish that, whip finish that, and throw it up on the rack. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes like, I don't know, 20, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't, maybe 40 seconds. It doesn't take long, you know, just, you know, Palmer in the eyes, dab a super glue in there, you know, keep Palmer in and put that flash tail on, come up, finish it, throw it up there. So I'll stack up a bunch of these blanks and I have different, like there's different flash tails, color configurations that I prefer for different minnow patterns that I'm shooting for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's how I can identify them.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, so up there, I've got, you know, like seven different colors of flash tails, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you know, I will wake up in the morning, and since I already have these blanks like tied and ready to go,
mm-hmm.
like it is no time at all to tie on, you know, a belly, a lateral line, and a back,
mm-hmm.
and then finish that, and then that goes back on the rack, right?
Just staging them out, yeah.
Just staging them out, mm-hmm. yeah. Now there's definitely times where, you know, I come in from a day and my guy or my guys happen to lose, you know, eight or nine flies throughout the day, you know, where it's like, oh, all right, I really need some of that color. Like that's what they've been eating and mm-hmm. that's what we need. And I have one left. So it's like, all right, I'm gonna, you know, either stay up late tonight and kind of get them started and finish them in the morning, or just, you know, just put the hammer down and tie a bunch and catch up at night, you know? Yeah. And I did a lot of that for a long time where it's just like, almost like a stress, like, oh, I really need that. Mm-hmm. I really need that. Like I can't. And, this makes it so much easier, you know? And, you know, it just works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll kind of go down that line when I make time, and usually I love tying in the morning, you know, I also got a spot outside, you know, that I love to, you know, just bring the vise and go outside and if the weather's nice. And, you know, tie in the shade, that's pretty special.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Yeah, and just kind of stack them up. And then, you know, usually I would say that what takes the longest to me is finishing the heads.
Mm. Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
Just because, you know, there's a particular type of profile that I like, that I want to see. And that for whatever reason, I have a confidence in it, you know, and it just feels better, you know, taking my time to do it. You know, I use a ton of Loon products, and I use the UV Clear fly finish, and usually in thick, you know, unless it's just crazy, crazy cold outside and we've lost power and we don't have as much heat. You know, I have that thin that will run like the thick when it's really cold.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So you're on the Loon Pro staff, right?
That's right. Yeah.
What you, I mean, you just were talking about their UV their UV clear. I use a lot of that too. What are some of their other things? You use a lot of their resins, the colored stuff these days? Like, what are some other tools and
stuff they have? Yeah, yes. Yeah, some of it. You know, there's some of the fly finish that they have in different colors. I love putting, you know, I learned this from Hogan Brown. I learned most of this stuff from Hogan Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, there's other like little kind of tricks that I picked up from my buddies, you know, Maury Hatch, Bryce Tedford, you know, as far as striper flies and clousers and stuff, you know. But there's a little thing Hogan taught me that was really cool about kind of putting a little bit of dab of that that colored UV just behind the eyes to basically mimic gills.
Mm. A little hot spot touch right there.
A little hot spot, yeah. You know. Do the fish really pay attention to that? I don't know. Yeah, right. It sure does make us feel better though. Yeah. Right.
That's what counts, man. did you have like a mentor? Did Hogan teach you tying your this variation on the clouser, or did someone show you the ropes on it, or?
Yeah, it was kind of a big combination of people, but I probably learned the most, you know, from Hogan Brown. Yeah, for sure. You know, Hogan kind of became a mentor to me when it came to guiding and working in this area. He was just a driving, super positive force, and invited me to come work with Cast Hope, you know, mm-hmm. and exposed me to the Cast Hope program. Fell in love with that. And invited me to come guide with him, work in striper. And it was just a huge honor. You know, it was mm-hmm. something that I wanted to do, but not really something that you really ask somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's so many guides that just kind of jump into zones, you know, just dive in and start doing what they want and, you know, kind of working like they've been there forever and mm-hmm. working like they've owned the place, it seems, you know. And I mean, I still consider myself a new guide, you know. I have been in this area, and I've been fishing, and I've been taking people fishing for, you know, 16 years in this area. But it, you know, to me, I'll always be the new guy, because I know a lot of old guys.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, when I was out on your boat, the first thing I noticed about your clousers, when we were on the sack fishing for striper was the, you know, and I know it's a specific addition to the deep minnow or flash tail clouser, whatever you want to call it, but the tail on it, had so much movement. Is there anything special that you do with that part to give yours that extra appeal?
Not so much. I mean, it may be a combination between the flash tail, but also kind of the, you know, that SF blend, you know, some of those synthetic fibers, and some of them, you know, I still love using bucktail. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, it, I think a lot of tires seem to kind of, there's so many, we have so many options nowadays, you know, and it just seems like every year there's more and more cool stuff that's coming out.
For sure.
That's getting thrown in this insanely glorious rabbit hole of fly tying that we're all sick with, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and you know, every time that hairline catalog comes out, you're just flipping going, you know, I mean, if you look at all my hairline catalogs here, it's almost like 3/4 of the pages are dog-eared. Yeah, right. You know, and I was just like, oh man, you know, of course it's like, oh, I need that. Oh, I should try that. Dude, I've never seen that.
Have you messed around with their like wish list thing on their website? Yeah. Like I sat there one night and like added so many things to this, like hypothetical wish list that I was going to someday spend all my money on. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Do you have any, you know, one thing, another thing I noticed, was the durability. Like, the, I mean, you got hungry fish chomping on those clousers like all day long on different days. And you even, and you're combing through them super hard to untangle the materials. Like what are some tips you have on keeping those things durable?
Well, I mean, for starters, you know, a lot has to do with just, you know, really getting a good base of thread over the, you know, the body. And I always finish it up, you know, with that UV before, you know, before I, button it up. And so a lot of that, if any of that material comes out, it's usually getting broken off.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not coming untied at all. It's not coming untied. It's not like it's in there. It's just, it's getting shredded and broken off. And with these striper, I think like on average, like my flies I've found, you know, just cause we've messed, you know, had a bunch of really hot days out there where it's like, oh wow, that thing's gone, you know, but some of these flies will last, you know, probably 35 bites, you know?
Yeah.
So before they start getting a little ratty,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And, but that said, sometimes they fish real good when they get gnarly.
Totally.
That's, you know, it's a good way to test out what, you know, what you really need in a fly. I remember fishing with Hogan kind of early on when I was getting into some of this stuff, and I had been working on a pattern that I was so excited to get out there. And we got out there on a day where, it was fishing really well. And I had this fly that it had every bell and whistle in it that a fly tire could put in it. You know, there was little red throat and like there were these gills and a flared, like, you know, cheeks. There's all this stuff, you know, lateral lines and this, and probably, you know, probably five different colors, you know, and I'm thinking like it looked really good. And, you know, two different flashes in the tail. And I remember that thing got a, like, it just kept getting hammered, you know, and in the end, like all the throat was gone, kept getting eaten. And then like the majority of the flash tail was gone. The whole collar, like kind of just got shredded to where I just broke it off, you know? And, in the end, it was just a little olive over white is all it was, and it just kept getting hammered. And I was like, you know, that's funny. Like it just goes to show, you know, that like, it's really easy for us to overthink things, you know,
and
angling and fly tying, you know?
And with those, you know, that fly's getting eaten for a reason. It's just like, you know, a conventional guy using plugs and there's this one plug that's all chewed up. You know, there's a reason that one's working.
Right.
It's like, I'm going with that one, not the shiny new one or whatever. Right. Like, you know,
Right.
Before our interview, I gave like a brief history on, you know, Bob Clouser creating the pattern and Lefty Craze influence on it. And then leading up to more modern influence on it, like Steve Adachi. Have you experimented with like any, rattles or anything like that in your,
100%.
In your
100%. I mean, I learned a lot, you know, from, Costello, and, Sherman, you know, and, I mean, that book that they put together was, you know, I mean, we studied that thing, you know, when we were, fishing the Delta. And I mean, and then Adachi, I've got a ton of respect for that fellow, and learned a lot from him too, as well. And, you know, I started using a lot of rattles when I was working down in the Delta and fishing alongside Maury and Bryce down there, and Toby Uppinghouse, and learned that, like, it seemed like rattles were pretty important in the mm-hmm. Delta, mm-hmm. you know, why? I don't know. Maybe there's just a lot more going on, but it seems like we use a lot more rattles in the Delta than we do in the river. But yeah, you know, I've tried all different rattles. Like I used to get the old school, like little brass worm rattles that had the little rubber, they had a few BBs in them, right? Mm-hmm. It was almost like a 22 shell, but a little bit slimmer,
okay.
You know, and they had like three little BBs in them and then a little rubber cap that capped it. Okay. Right. And they would work as long as you would properly glue that rubber cap onto the, you know, they're made to actually pierce and, embed in plastics and worms.
Oh, okay. You know what
I mean? And, you know, I would find those things and I would doctor them up with that super glue just to keep them from leaking. Cause mm-hmm. as soon as they leak, they're done, you know? And I use those for a long time until I found the glass rattles. And then I use those for a long time. But what I didn't like about it is it always, I could never tie it to where I still had a really good gape, you know, but I had a body that wasn't too wide.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Too fat. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I experienced, and then of course the plastic ones, you know, but, in the end, Adachi's method is just beautiful. You know, he's got videos up of, you know, how he does that. And I've got some of his flies, you know, that I've fished for a long time, and I've got some that I'll never fish.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. I want to hang on to forever. You
that's
know?
Rad. Yeah.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's
awesome. I hope I can get him on the program here one of these days. He's definitely on my list.
I'm actually holding one right now.
Nice. Yeah. Do you have a preferred hook style? Are you always tying on jig hooks or straight hooks for clousers?
Yeah. That's a great question. So, for the most part, always a 60 degree bend hook. And, I prefer, A-Rex, makes a heck of a hook. The PR370 60 bent streamer, hook. And honestly, for the most part, man, I mean, I tie on 4-0s, you know, mostly 4-0 hooks. Sometimes 3-0s. You know, now that's for striper. You know, that is such a big hook that what people are used to, you know, most people are used to, but man, I mean, we've had big fish bend these hooks out, you know?
Yeah.
It's no joke. I mean, I have some even, you know, heftier stuff in here that I've used before, some 6-0s and, you know, big saltwater type stuff. But for the most part, like my go-to is the A-Rex PR370, cool. You know, there's another one like the Gommies are really good, like the Jig 60s. You know, the A-Rex, there's something about that hook. It feels like a just a brick house.
Yeah.
The other times that I would tie like on a straight hook is if I were to do like a hollow fly, you know, or flies that I'm fishing in, or game changers, you know what I mean? So that's usually when I would be, tying on a straight, on some kind of straight hook. Every once in a while, I don't tie too many of them, but I do really enjoy. But when I tie bluegill patterns, I do like it tying them on, like on EWGs, you know, just offset shanks.
Cool.
You know, in like a 3-aught or 4-aught, something big, you know. The A-Rex for some of the, anytime if I'm tying like a hollow fly or a beast fly or game changers, I really dig the predator hooks.
For sure.
A-Rex.
You know, you talked about getting some of those 4-aughts, you know, bent out by fish on the river here. I feel like people that come to, you know, Northern California and catch river striper for the first time are always kind of surprised at how strong they are, you know, the first time they come out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts, man. And you know, you get a fish and that fish starts heading up current, you know, or hits the current while the boat's in a back eddy or going the other way, you know, the weight of that fish sometimes seems to double, right? it's just insane. But
so would you,
there's some brutes.
Yeah, for sure. Would you agree with Lefty Cray and say that the Clouser minnow is like your desert island fly? Like you could only pick one forever.
Oh, 100%. You know, and I had the honor of meeting, Bob.
Cool.
We were, I met him through, was over in Michigan hanging out with the Schulte crew and fishing smallmouth over there and went to be a part of an event over there, to speak about the bass fishing we had over here and whatnot.
Cool. Yeah.
And just hang with buds and fish for smallies there. And, Bob Clouser was there and his wife and, yeah, it was really cool. I was kind of starstruck,
yeah,
really. And
that's
even
cool.
Like I ended up playing some music at one point and I was playing and I was on stage and he just walked up in between a couple songs
on stage.
Like he just, walked on stage and him and his wife, and he just walked up and I mean, there's like a crowd of people there and he walked up and just kind of, you know, put his arm around me and he goes, "Hey," he goes, "I'm really enjoying this. And I just want to thank you for helping me not fall asleep."
Oh man, that's so good.
and then he was like, "I'm going to go get a sandwich."
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm like, right on, boss. Thank you, sir. I'm like, "Hey man, I can't even tell you. I appreciate everything you've done for us."
Dude,
you know, and
he's
like,
cool.
"No problem." And walked away and his wife was super sweet. And, but
yeah, that is so good.
Thanks for helping me not fall asleep. I'm going to go get a sandwich. Oh, he's too cool.
That is rad, man. So, you know, mentioned.
Yeah, it probably would be. It probably would be. Could I pick the sizes? I can pick a bunch of different sizes.
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
So, I mean, it just works. I don't care where you go or what you do. Like a minnow pattern is, you know, little fish get eaten by big fish.
Yeah, it's the truth, man. And I learned something new the other day. I didn't realize that people were catching max off the bank in Tahoe on the fly. And they're throwing minnow patterns out there because they're all, you know, they're darting through the shallow rocks out there looking for food. Looks like fun. You mentioned Cast Hope earlier. And I, on a few of these episodes that I've been recording, I throw a little shout out to Cast Hope on them, because I really, you know, I really dig what they're doing. Yeah, and I was wondering if fly tying was part of that program at all. You know, I know it's geared towards the outdoors and fishing and stuff, but I wasn't sure if that was part of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, we have all kinds of different fundraiser events throughout the year, from steelhead tournaments to concerts. You know, to we just had the we hosted the Fly Fish and Film Tour, mm-hmm. that just came through Nevada County. You know, so we have all different kinds of events, and it's a pretty common thing. We'll sometimes have fly tires donate a certain, you know, amount of flies, mm-hmm. or whatnot for a box, you know, that'll get either auctioned off or raffled off, you know.
That's cool.
Pretty common thing.
So
that's something that has been implemented into the program in other places. For me, some of the partners that I have, we haven't done that yet, you know, but it's something that we could very well do down the road, and it would be awesome to. We have a great partner right now in our community that actually would work really well with.
Awesome.
You know, but we just past couple years were a real struggle, man. I mean, we weren't able to do a whole lot of Cast Hope trips. We weren't able to do the fundraisers, mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of hard, you know, just to know that there were kids just kind of sitting around, mm-hmm. not doing anything,
yeah.
you know, meanwhile, mm-hmm. you know, there's all this, you know, wonder and amazement out there in the world that they could be experiencing, you know. Yeah,
for sure. And, you know, on the tying side of it too, like it's such at least for me, like a meditative kind of cathartic thing to tie, you know, and there's a different satisfaction there. Like you're, you know, you lose a lot, fishing. You don't always catch them. Right. And, you do end up with something cool, like an artistic thing at the end of tying every time. And, you know, my daughter loves it too already. You know, she's 7. And, you know, I just figured, that'd be a fun thing to be part of, you know, as part of the program, if it wasn't already. I mean, it all goes hand in hand. You know, you mentioned, John Sherman earlier too, isn't he? He's part of your Cal Bass Union, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. a few years ago, I helped launch the store, your guys' Cal Bass Union store. Right. And I thought the idea was super cool right away. You guys have anything new going on?
I mean, we're always kind of adding content, you know. Ryan Williams is a beast. He's always, you know, doing a lot of really great videos, instructional videos to get added to the website. You know, we're constantly trying to just put some content out there, mm-hmm. to help people. You know, the whole idea for the Cal Bass Union wasn't, you know, we weren't looking to be an outfitter. We weren't looking to make money. We were honestly just looking to expose all this cool stuff that we had in California, you know, mm-hmm. that wasn't getting a whole lot of, you know, attention. And I mean, expose is kind of a wrong. We weren't looking to blow spots, you know,
up. Sure.
But it was more about just the methods, you know, making people aware, you know what I mean? I remember Ryan Williams and I, you know, back in, you know, when we had the one big high water year, 2016, mm-hmm. was it 2017? And all these rivers were blown out and everything. And Ryan Williams and I were out on the Lake Oroville, just roping them, you know, and all these rivers were shot, all these rivers are blown out and everybody's talking about how there's no fishing anywhere. Mm-hmm. And everybody had buttoned up their gear. And meanwhile, we're out there just having a ball and mm-hmm. roping, you know, roping these fish and no one around. And we were talking about, this was when we were, you know, kind of just bouncing ideas back and forth about the float and fly method, mm-hmm. you know, and figuring out different leaders and flies and, you know, researching characteristics of, you know, our prey, our bait fish there, the Wakasagi, which is like super unique, mm-hmm. you know, to our area and everything. And we were just talking about how, you know, here we were, like we stumbled upon just all these healthy, happy fish at a time of year where most people think there's yeah. nothing going on.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And, oh, and then aside from that, along with that, a method to like consistently get them. And so that was kind of one driving force, you know, along with the fact that, you know, there's a lot of people in this world that don't really realize, you know, what we're doing out there is chasing, you know, 35, 40, 45 pound striper on a fly rod, you know. And so that was kind of another whole reason to, you know, well, start this California Bass Union.
And like potential world record, like spotted bass too, right? On some of these lakes.
Oh, no doubt. No yeah. doubt. Yeah. I mean, like I went down that rabbit hole for a little while and I got in touch with IGFA and, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of red tape and there was some weird, you know, there's kind of some weird stuff in the records that I found personally.
Oh yeah.
You know,
really?
Yeah. You know, I had Matt Callies, another, CalBass Union member. He called me, I posted a photo of a spotty once and he called me up and he goes, dude, how much that fish weigh? You know? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, six and a half or something like that. And he's like, what pound test did you, you know, and mm-hmm. we started talking and anyhow, he's like, man, I think that was a line class record. And he's like, I only know it cause I broke it last year.
Oh yeah.
You know? And I've never really cared about records. I've never cared about chasing records or doing any of that. But the more I started talking to him about that and thinking about that, the more I just thought, man, how cool would it be
yeah.
to have like an 8-year-old Cast Hope kid catch
hell yeah.
an all tackle world record spotted bass?
That'd be so rad. Yeah.
Just like would just blow all of our minds, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean?
That's super cool.
So I started going down that rabbit hole and I kind of looked into, you know, some of the records and what was really odd is I found a few records, you know, where it was no question. I saw the fly records and I'm like, oh man, we've broke that like multiple times,
yeah.
you know? And so then it was like a total reality. I'm like, whoa, like we've had plenty over well over that. And so I call up some people. I won't say any names. I call up an organization and I was trying to get put together what's known as like a record box, right? So that's like something to have in the boat that has a certified scale, the paperwork, you know,
approved tippet and all that. Yeah.
Right. Everything you need to properly document a potential world record. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that I was communicating with said, oh, wait a second, which fishery are you fishing in? And I explain to him which one it was. And he continued to say, oh, well, that's a different strain of spotted bass. And we don't have a line class or even a fly class record in place for that particular strain of bass. Hmm. Right. Which, you know, I mean, we all were very well aware, like spotties were introduced in the '70s in Northern California. And we have two strains, a Kentucky strain and an Alabama strain. Alabama strains are the ones that, those are those records, those world records. Kentucky strain are smaller. Very similar to how you have Florida strain bass that get ginormous, and then you have Northern strain, right? That still get big, but they're not going to grow like a big old, you know, big old Okeechobee largemouth, right,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And so I was like, well, I'm like, that's wild. So for me or my clients to beat this world record, there's no fly record, no fly caught record. We have to beat the all tackle record, you know? And he's like, yeah, that's correct. Which makes, it doesn't make a lot of sense. No, it's like, no. Well, how do we start it? Who starts it?
Yeah. That's what I thought, like, you were going to get into. I thought you were going to say you could kind of set
the chicken or the egg.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you could set all these because it was totally free and clear, but it's the opposite. I got to actually go against the all tackle.
I'm not really sure how that goes. So then this was where I kind of walked away from it all. And so I started researching some of the records, right? Mm-hmm. And I noticed that three of the registered fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three of the registered fish that were documented were caught. And now, granted, he's telling me that there is no record for, you know, there's no fly record for Alabama strain, only Kentucky strain, right? That's what he's telling me.
Yeah.
So three of the records I noticed were caught like 10 minutes from my mama's house.
Oh, yeah.
in Sterrett, Alabama.
Wow.
Right. So I'm like, I look at that and I'm like, huh. So how would they tell that bass was a Kentucky strain bass if it was caught smack dab in the middle of Alabama?
Yeah.
And so I called him up and said, hey, you know, with all due respect, you know, I'm just trying to figure this out. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. This fish, and this fish were all caught out of these reservoirs. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's right in the middle of Alabama. How is it determined that those were Kentucky strain fish?
Do they have an answer?
Oh, I haven't heard back from them yet. So,
well, I saw that you were putting out a new sauce, Dandy Sauce, which I don't think is your first foray into that world. Can you tell me a little bit what's going on with that?
Yeah, for sure. We just made it available to order online. We have a red one, a red sauce, a green sauce. They're pretty much, if people are familiar with like the Scoville scale, the heat scale, they're more kind of along the lines of like an 8 to 10, maybe 11,000 on the scale. They're not gnarly, you know. It's more of a table sauce. Good on kind of everything, pizza, tacos, eggs, you know, whatnot, whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we started the company in 2014, but we just kind of went through a bunch of mess, had a really tough time, you know, finding the right distributor, tough time finding the right co-packer. It was a long haul of spending a lot of money with very little return, mm-hmm. you know, And we just about threw in a towel. And oddly enough, I had a client who was fishing with me regularly, like once a month. And she ran a company runs a company called Wise Goat Organics. She makes sauerkraut, mustards, gut tonics, tinctures, all kinds of cool stuff.
Cool.
And started talking to her about the sauce company, and she was just blown away that it failed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because in her mind, she's like, how can you have all these people like that follow your music and stuff and have something like that fail? Because in her mind, she's like, I don't have near the outreach that you do. And, you know, my stuff is off the charts, you know, it's mm-hmm. going. And so she wanted to just jump in and help us out, help
That's
me
cool.
and my partner, Chad, out. She just was like, hey, learn from my mistakes. Let me help out any way I can. So she kind of jumped into it, just helping us along. And man, we noticed she was just kicking so much ass that, mm-hmm. that we just, you know, spoke to my partner, Chad, and we decided to cut her in as a, you know, full share, partner. And,
awesome.
And we're so happy we did it, you know, and, yeah, I mean, who knows? You never know. It's a wild, saturated market. We know that, but I have a lot of friends, you know, in the bar and restaurant and music industry. And, you know, it's something fun to do. You know, I think we make a really beautiful, like really, really lovely sauce.
Nice.
Like we eat a lot of it.
Yeah.
We eat a lot of it. And it seems like everybody loves it. So
it does seem like it's a really like saturated market right now. You're right. It seems like it's popular. I mean, I have probably a dozen bottles in my fridge, man. I'll have to
oh,
grab some of yours and give it a shot. And I, you know,
please do.
I'm not a big, like I can't take the crazy spice. So this sounds good for me. I'm going to grab some.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I've been asking everybody, that's totally unrelated to fly tying in these interviews I've been doing is, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people that travel a lot and go to, you know, remote places, or you're touring all the time and you're as a fisherman, you know, I'm sure you're hit some remote spots. Do you have any weird, like paranormal or ghosts or UFO stories or anything like that you could tell?
No, not really.
Matthew, it's the Lord. Can I ask you a question?
Oh man, I already know where this is going.
Why are you so adamant about asking these guests these stupid questions in every interview?
Dude, I don't know. Interviewing people is hard, and I'm curious about all this weird stuff, okay? You know, some people would say just the idea of you is weird. My friends would definitely call me weird if they knew I was talking to you.
No, stop. You don't have any friends.
Hey.
I'm kidding you, baby. Somehow you managed to convince some fairly popular and knowledgeable people to be guests on your podcast that nobody has heard about, and you're actually having some pretty good conversations. But you have to throw this paranormal question every single time.
I know. Jonathan Farmer had kind of a ghost story, though, and April Vokey had a pretty cool reported sighting of a big cat in a place they don't live at all. It's not like I'm totally striking out every time.
I mean, these people don't even know you. If they actually had a wild UFO story or something, why would they tell you? I wouldn't tell you anything, and I've literally seen everything. I actually made everything, remember? Why would they talk to you about any of that weird, but obviously real and true stuff in the middle of an interview about fly tying to a bunch of strangers on the internet?
Oh my God, would you just let me be me?
You're gonna keep asking, aren't you?
Yeah, probably.
Fine, can I borrow $40?
What?
I mean, there's times where I've you know, felt some things in the sense that, you know, I've felt like my family around me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that has, you know, put a chill up my spine, you know, in a very good way.
For sure. Yeah. It's stuff I read a lot about this stuff. So I like asking anybody, you know, who is, you know, spending time in a lot of different places meeting a lot of different people, like if they have anything like that. Anyway, you know, Chuck, that's all I have for you today. And I know that starting to get towards supper time and all that. You know, I appreciate you finding the time to chat with me. I know you're real busy, and you know, even with the short time that I've spent on your boat, it's obvious that you're a natural teacher and a leader, and just like a consistently positive influence. You know, and the older I get, the more I believe that positive intention really does like manifest more positivity. And it's hard to apply that in these crazy times we're in. And, you know, the world needs more dudes like you. So thanks again, dude, for everything. And
For those kind words, man. Well, yeah, man, make it back sometime. Let's get after it.
Absolutely, dude. Best of luck to you and your band and your family this year, dude.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Thanks a bunch. Thanks again to Chuck Reagan for spending an hour with me on one of his few days off. He's about as genuine as they come, and I hope to have him back on the show soon. I do my best not to tell you what to do, but I highly encourage anyone who listens to this podcast to do three things if you're able to. Number one, grab a copy of Hot Water Music's new album, Feel the Void. It's very good, and it's available in every location and on any format you choose to consume music. I'll play a track from it to close things out today. Number two, hire Chuck as your guide and spend a day on his boat fly fishing. It doesn't matter what your skill level is, you're going to have a great time. I know guide days aren't cheap, but it's worth every penny. And number three, you should probably get yourself a bottle of red and a bottle of green dandy sauce. You like flavors, right? I love flavors. Links for this stuff will be in the show notes, so you can do the things I politely asked you to consider. Thanks for listening. I'm going to continue giving shout-outs to these two organizations because I like what they do, and this is my show, so I get to do what I please. Cast Hope is a nonprofit organization positively impacting kids and their mentors in California and Western Nevada through free fly fishing and outdoor experiences. Through their program, clients build mentoring relationships, fly fishing skills, outdoor knowledge, sustainable practices, and personal values. Cast Hope's Gift of the Outdoors empowers each mentoring pair to grow closer as they participate in healthy hobbies together. Check them out at casthope.org and whichever social network you like to use. Wild Steelheaders United was established to educate and mobilize numerous wild steelhead advocates. It's a place where anglers become more informed about wild steelhead biology and ecology, keep abreast of policy issues, and learn about Trout Unlimited's conservation work. As demonstrated by history, it is certainly possible to rally conservation-minded steelhead anglers to weigh in on specific management decisions that threaten to eliminate something they value. But there is no precedent for advancing a proactive, sustainable policy agenda at scale through purely volunteer efforts. Chances of conservation success are greatest if we have the backing of as many individuals as possible across all the Pacific states. This is why Wild Steelheaders United is critical. Visit wildsteelheaders.org for more info.
Today's episode of the Secret Society of Fly Tires is brought to you by Scientific Fact Magazine, the only magazine to contain nothing but 100% true facts, which are absolutely based on science, research, medicine, knowledge, facts, science, and truth. Pick up a copy at your local magazine factory and learn amazing factoids like air is actually poisonous sometimes and bugs are pretty gross. Or go to www.scientificfactmagazine.com/flytires and enter the code WETFISH to receive 6% off your first annual subscription. Order now.
We're taking a life, holding on to a shallow wall, shaking off the will to die alone, tied and tethered down. We scratch at the eyes of our demons in the darkest room. I'm dropping down, 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 down. I must own
everything you play.
Hey, I must own
everything I've got to be.
You think I know how to keep on dropping down, 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 down.
Another breath, another step.